I'm happiest where I, like, where I am right now. Not because the place I live in now is, like, wonderful, it's not bad or anything, but just because I can do the things that I want to do. Now I have a shop, and I have access to things. I have a lot of tools and materials, and just, like, that concept that it's not so, like, I realized this kind of later on, that it's not so much, like, where you are or, like, the thrill of going somewhere. I think it's, like, having the opportunity to create things, which is, like, the most important, at least for me, to be happy and satisfied. And if I have that, like, if the structure allows me to do those things, then I'm happy.
Welcome back to the Make or Break Show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and the make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm your host, Brandon Cullum, and this week we chat with Lynn from Darbin Over. Not only does she bring a female perspective to a male-dominated woodworking and making space, but she also incorporates a bunch of different mediums and techniques into her work. Plus, she is Swedish. This is the first show of 2018, and we thought we would start off with a bang. But before we get into Lynn's interview, I would love to ask you for a favor. I'm currently in the process of planning upcoming guests and topics for the rest of the year, and I would love to get your feedback on the show. Just head over to www.makeorbreakshop.com/survey. It takes about 5 minutes, and everyone who fills it out will get an exclusive Make or Break Show sticker to add to your sticker wall or anywhere else that you put stickers. I've already gotten some great feedback with some fun future potential guest ideas, so just take a couple minutes, knock it out. Greatly appreciate it. Thanks. Over the break, I had a few visits to IKEA. We have a baby on the way, and we needed a dresser. Since I had a ton of other projects going on, this wasn't something that I was going to be able to make, and that baby has a pretty hard deadline. IKEA is unique, but one of the most unique parts are the names. Things like Hemnes, Kopang, Undridal. Zero clue how to pronounce those or what it means. But this week's guest does. Lynn and her husband are the team behind the awesome YouTube channel and website, Darbin Over. They have been putting out content since 2014 and recently had an awesome video on how to pronounce those crazy IKEA names. I've loved following her work over the years, and what stands out is how many different types of materials and techniques she is using. From traditional woodworking to leather to electronics and even 3D printing, her projects are super unique. She also has one heck of a work ethic. At the time of this recording, she was just a few weeks away from giving birth to her son, August, and she was still going strong. She's since given birth and introduced August to the world on her YouTube channel over the Christmas break. This interview was a blast, and it all got started with me asking something I've wondered for quite a while. What exactly does Darbin Over mean?
Darbin Over is the name of my channel, which is kind of a play on my dog's name, actually. His name is Darwin, and I didn't want to use my full name, and I wanted something kind of unique and funny. Okay. And my dog's name's nickname is Darbin Over, so that's kind of what the channel turned into. So, yeah.
Well, sweet. So, with that, I know you grew up definitely not in the States, and so you grew up in Sweden, and kind of getting into your making background, I feel like I saw a story, or maybe I read something where it was like wooden spoon. Was that kind of your first maybe like making experience?
I don't know. I mean, I've always been making stuff one way or another. I was always this very kind of crafty,
yeah,
quiet kid who was always doing things. And in Sweden, we have like wood shop and sewing shop early on in school, like slöjd.
Okay.
So I think starting, second grade or something like that. So every 6 months, everybody does wood shop, and every 6 months, everybody does sewing shop up till like sixth grade or something like that.
Oh, wow.
But it's kind of like a normal part of a school to do that kind of stuff. So I don't know what the first project was, but we did a lot of like whittling, you know, like butter spoons and making little plywood projects with design and things like that. So it was always kind of a part growing up. But I mean, I didn't have, oftentimes when you kind of hear people's stories and how they got into woodworking, they're often like, oh, I had my grandfather who was all into the shop, or yeah, my dad or something like that. I never had that, but I kind of wish I had.
Yeah.
Because then you have this kind of personal connection, which is a little bit different from like going, doing it in school, which is just like everybody's doing it and you just have to do it, you know?
Yeah.
But otherwise I was just always doing a lot of that, like drawing and crafting and painting and that kind of stuff at home.
Yeah, what was it? So, what was it about just making stuff in general that you enjoyed about it?
I don't know. I think maybe something about like the control you get over something when you actually get to manipulate something, you get to understand it. It kind of gives you this really awesome feeling when you actually completed something, or you went from this idea concept and then you actually turned it into something, and you know, and then you often have like all these different steps on the way. I remember as a kid when you're thinking like, maybe this, you know, this might be kind of cool, and then you start working on it, and then when you finish, and every now and then you're like, wow, this actually turned out pretty good.
Yeah.
And you just feel so happy and proud of yourself. So I just kind of like that end result feeling, I think. And the fact that I wanted stuff that I thought would be, plus I thought everybody would like just love it if I always made Christmas presents for everybody. So I was still like 6 months of the year, I was always working on Christmas presents for everybody, because that was like my favorite thing to do. So
yeah. Is there a project that kind of stands out from you during that time?
I do remember that I made a tray in school, but it was like a Christmas present, but I got to use cherry plywood and then cherry handles.
Oh, cool.
And I couldn't believe that I got to use such, like, I thought it was the fanciest wood in the world.
Yeah.
Like, this was like the highest end stuff you could get, I thought. And I thought it was so like, I thought it came out just like amazing. And I remember I was really proud of that tray, even though it's kind of like, I mean, it was a very simple project, but it was one of those things that sticks with you a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you get to the States then from Sweden?
Well, I came here just on an exchange to study English, to improve my English. And then pretty soon after I came here, I met Matt, who now is my husband.
Oh, okay.
And we were both, yeah. So I didn't actually stick around in school for long, because he was doing his own business. And I always say I kind of hijacked into entrepreneurship, because he was doing this stuff. And I thought it was just so, like, interesting and fun. And so we actually left, like, really soon after we left, after I came here, we left and went to Paris instead. And we got a little apartment there, and we lived there for a couple of months, and and then ran a business from there. And he was teaching me all about programming and servers and things like that. And then we have been running businesses one way or another since then. And then we lived in Sweden for a while, we lived in Paris, and then eventually we made our way back here.
Yeah.
And,
Where, what was your favorite place to live other than where you're living now?
You know, the funny thing is, I think, I remember when I grew up in Sweden when I was young, I was always looking to get out, not because things were bad there or anything, but I always had this idea that I wanted to have adventure and I wanted to travel and I wanted to just get out or whatever. And then after I did that, like, looking back at it now, I'm happiest where I am right now. Not because the place I live in now is like wonderful, it's not bad or anything, but just because I can do the things that I want to do.
Yeah.
Now I have a shop and I have access to things. I have a lot of tools and materials, and just like that concept that it's not so, like, I have realized this kind of later on, that it's not so much like where you are or like the thrill of going somewhere. I think it's like having the opportunity to create things, which is like the most important, at least for me, to be happy and satisfied. And if I have that, like if the structure allows me to do those things, then I'm happy. So yeah. I would say that this is my favorite place right now, just because it enables me to do those things.
Yeah, that's really cool. So what was the business you guys were doing? You said it was software engineering, is that right?
Yeah, we did software, servers, wrote various programs for different businesses. We got into doing a content management system, and kind of went from, tested the waters in a lot of different areas. And that's kind of what we were doing. Yeah, we were doing software when I started the YouTube channel as well. So we kind of were able to do both for quite some time and kind of transition into that.
Okay.
Whereas now we both do the YouTube full time.
Okay.
I kind of completely transitioned into that. So it was kind of nice to, like, we've never actually, well, I have never worked for, I never had a job in the traditional sense. And yeah, he hasn't really either, not for real. So the whole idea of like working for ourselves has always been very natural, and very like the only way to go. I mean, I realize that's different for different people depending on your experience and how you are. But like the idea that we were able to go into YouTube and now do this full time is just less like, I wake up in the morning and I think sometimes like if I was 12 and I looked like forward towards my life, and I think if I could do something where I get to just sit there and make things and then turn it into little movies and then have people watch those, I mean, that seems like the most amazing thing ever.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It doesn't get any better than that. So yeah.
So what's it like working with your husband? Like, was that ever hard to like separate the relationship and then working together, or has it been kind of easy for you guys?
Well, I think it's both hard and easy. I think it's always annoying to be around somebody a lot because you just get sick of, you know, it's nice to have your own space.
Yeah.
So you just kind of have to find little ways to, you know, get out of the house or go to the coffee shop or do things, you know, that kind of thing. But at the same time, I also think that I think it would be really difficult to have it any other way, because our lives are so intertwined, because everything we do is like, we don't have separate lives in the same way as many people do, where they each have their own job and then they come home and they make dinner and then they talk about their jobs. It's like everything we talk about and everything we do, it comes back to the business always. So it's very fun in that way too, because we're always in it completely. Like we're always like focused on the same thing. So I think in that sense, I think that's really a really nice thing, because then it doesn't have this separation, even though sometimes, you know, he drives me crazy. So, I mean, there's an up and down, but, you know, yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I couldn't imagine. I think I'd drive my wife absolutely crazy if we were home all day. She'd be like, would you please just go do something else right now? So, So how do you guys split up kind of the roles, or do you guys kind of do a little bit of everything?
No, I mean, he does a lot of like product, like testing and stuff ahead of time, especially if it's electronic stuff. He's really good in that department. So he does a lot of just like concept testing. And I always say that we have like an idea factory going on at home here, because it's constantly about like what new ideas can we come up with. And we often work on maybe like 5-6 projects at the same time in different stages of completion. And, you know, oftentimes something doesn't work out at all. So he does a lot of that. We both kind of do builds, do the building part, different stages. I'm the one who has been in front of the camera completely until a couple of months ago, when he started kind of doing some stuff on camera as well. but I do all the editing. I find it really hard to kind of split, because I really like the editing, and I feel like it's like, I don't know, it's hard to share that in a way, because you have this vision or this idea that you want to execute, and then it's a hard one to split, I think.
It's almost like you kind of know the story that you're trying to tell, and you're shooting for that story, and I could totally see that,
especially when you do voiceover too, and it's very integrated. And I can imagine I guess it kind of goes back to the way you film, maybe, if you do a lot of just on camera talking and no other, like if you don't do voiceover, it might be a little bit easier. But
Let's see. So you started on YouTube, was it 3 years ago? About 3 years ago?
Yeah, about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago now.
Was it just kind of a natural, like, hey, let's put a video up, or like to play around, or was it like, hey, this could be something we could build towards?
I mean, I think it was a little bit of both, to be honest. We had just bought the house a little while before that, and was just making a lot of stuff for the house, and at the same time like watching a lot of YouTube, just getting into it, just like thinking, oh, there's actually these people out here who are building stuff and doing stuff on camera, and that's so cool, and like here, like I am doing stuff too, and you know, could be kind of cool to do that. So I was kind of really intrigued by the world that you could be a part of and that existed. So at first it was like, this is for fun, like to just see how it would work out. But I think it's at the back of our heads, there was also this idea that this could become something, you know, if you push through and if you like get through it and if you really like focus on it. But it wasn't like where that was like the main goal right from the start. Like, yeah. Okay, now we're going to become YouTubers, you know?
Yeah.
But it was it was more like, this sounds like so much fun to do. And, you know, who knows, maybe it could lead somewhere in the future. But it was, yeah. So it was more from that point of view.
When was there a moment when you realized like other people were watching and like interacting? Like you weren't just kind of putting something out there just into the ether?
Well, of course, when you start out and you have nobody watching, you know, you get so excited if you do get a comment or if somebody does watch, you know, you realize that you're getting feedback in some way. And I don't remember exactly when that started trickling in a little bit, but, you know, it's a slow growth.
Yeah.
It's definitely I remember being like in the beginning, I was so hyper every morning I woke up and I had to check, you know, right away, has somebody watched it, you know, has somebody commented? And you're just, and then if you do have a comment or if you have, you know, you see that you got a little bit of higher numbers on one video, you know, maybe you got 50 views instead of a, you know, 20 or whatever, then you just get so excited. I don't know. It's always so tricky with growing a channel. And like today, must be very difficult to grow a channel from scratch. There's so much stuff going on.
That's cool. One thing I really like about your stuff is like the spaces that you work in. So I think maybe one of the first videos I was watching, like all of a sudden you're outside and I was like, oh, she's in this like super like nice, must be a really big shop or something, like the way it was shot. And then like I'm watching the shop update and I'm like, you're like, this is like, what is it, a 10 by 15? Is that right? The shop that you have, something around that?
No, like, it's a little bit smaller.
A little bit smaller,
it's 200
okay.
square feet.
Okay, 200,
so
okay.
It's 12 by 12, what is it? Yeah. It's 200 square feet. It's not very big.
Yeah, because I always try to talk my wife into letting me like do more stuff in the garage. I have this like little shed that I think it's like a 10 by 10 in the backyard. And she's like, no, you got enough room. And so, but that's like you doing stuff. And I'm like, man, she's doing all kinds of stuff with not a ton of room. So what's it kind of like as a maker having more like dedicated spaces? Like, is that, and I know especially with the maker space you've been working on too, is that, do you like that? Or how's that kind of influenced your workflow?
I actually think that having, okay, so what, I basically have three workspaces.
Okay.
The shop, which I built a couple of years ago, the one outside. And that is, it looks pretty finished. It's a pretty nice space. And that was kind of the goal of that, because I didn't want like a, you know, like a garage feel or a shop feel that wasn't finished. Like I put molding up and like decent flooring and curtains and things like that. And then they have the outdoor shop, which is a carport. And that's where we do all of our dirty work. So that's where the table saw, the band saw, the miter saw, the lathe, like everything that produces a lot of dust and shavings is out there, which is, it's really great in the summer and not so comfortable in the rainy winter always.
Yeah.
but at least it makes you pretty efficient when you're cutting and doing stuff, especially when the weather isn't great. But it is nice to have that kind of separation, because that enables the indoor shop to become or to stay relatively clean. Mm-hmm. Like if I use hand tools and stuff in the indoor shop,
okay,
but not power tools. Or yeah, I have like a drill press, but yeah, nothing nothing too bad. And in that space, even, it's separated. The indoor shop is separated into multiple workstations. And I really think that is key in order to have a good productive workflow and really utilize the space great. Because I think that the shop has like, I'm just kind of 1, 2, 3, like 5 workstations in it.
Okay.
Which is like, I have like a little tinker corner area where I do electronics. And then a bench, and then a computer area, and then another overhead area, and then another bench where I have like a drill press and a few tools and things like that. And I think that dividing a small space up into even smaller spaces where you each one has a dedicated purpose really really makes the space so much more practical and efficient. And then the idea of the makerspace now, which is indoors, is actually in my dining room.
Yeah.
because that's when I realized, especially since we both work on many of these projects and these videos together, we really needed more workspace because we can't always be in each other's ways. And I really like the idea of having a workspace inside the home. I like everything about that. I like the philosophy behind that as well, because people spend so much, put so much value and effort into having like a nice living room and a nice kitchen and, you know, all those things. And oftentimes when I come into people's houses, I see, you know, a beautiful setup where they put a lot of resources and efforts into these spaces. And I think, well, where do you do anything? Yeah. Like, where do you actually get to work? Like, yeah. even just like, doesn't have to be dirty work. I mean, it can be like, where do you sit down and write or read or you know, I don't know, glue things together.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be woodworking necessarily. And then I think that how most people or many people have maybe an unused corner in their dining room or in their, I don't know, somewhere that is not utilized. There's so many little corners and nooks that you know you could do something with. And then by actually placing more effort and like just by saying that this is an important part of our lives, you know, like you want to make it as easy as possible to get to work or do things or be creative. And if that space is there for you to do that, I mean, I think that structure really dictates what we do so much. And if there's no place for you to do those things, then you're not going to do them, or you're not going to do them as easily. And that goes for your entire family. So if you have kids and you want them to grow up in a creative way and do a lot of things, well, if you don't provide that space for them to do that, it's not going to happen as naturally.
Yeah.
So that was kind of also the idea behind the makerspace, that I really wanted. Of course, I live in a tiny house, so there wasn't a whole lot of choice in terms of where you put something. And I have like desks in every single room. But I wanted like a really well organized and thought through space in the center of the house that you can just constantly go to, you know, if something breaks and you need to repair something, or you just want to sit down and draw or sew, or so that there is that place inside the home as well. I mean, because we do this all the time, so we have, you know, the shops outside as well. But just in general, like when you actually invite, if people come into your home, whether it's family or friends, they are welcome.
Yeah.
You're encouraged to become part of that process of being, of doing something, of, and now it just kind of naturally happens that the makerspace has been a year in the making.
Yeah.
It took a while for various reasons, but now it has become, I only really used it properly for a couple of weeks. And so far I've been doing sewing and leather working and paper crafting and just like repair stuff. So, but it's just like a place to go to do those things. And,
That build has been so much fun to watch. And I think every time I see, especially on Instagram, it's like, that's because we want to build something kind of like that, I think, in our house. And I'm showing my wife, I'm like, look at this. She's like, oh, that's so cool. She's like, I can do my sewing there. I'm like, yeah. It's like, let me get a 3D printer and I can put that there too. So it's cool. So with you, now that you kind of have those dedicated spaces and you have one more, do you kind of, I guess your week, do you have like a typical week, like you're in the shop in the morning and you go outside in the afternoon, or is it kind of depending on the project and what you guys are working on?
It really very much depends, actually. I would like to create a better schedule, but I find that to be really hard to stick to. I think that it very much depends on what's going on. We tend to have breakfast and go over ideas every morning. And then after that, it's either, since I spend a fair amount of time editing, I often try to get out of the house if I can. So I often go to the coffee shop or something like that and do some editing and just, you know, keep on top of emails and, you know, all that stuff that you need to manage, which is kind of boring at times, that tend to get away from you if you don't stay on top of it. And then I tend to come back in the afternoon and do more actual making stuff. But that can also vary very much depending on what goes on. And then, Matt's usually out in the shop working on something, some idea or something, while I'm out. So we get some of that separation, and then we usually work together often on things, maybe in the afternoon and in the evenings as well. There's really no... we haven't had any any like weeks and weekends for a long time. Doesn't really seem to exist.
It changes up, yeah.
It just kind of all blends together.
Yeah.
And now I'm pregnant now, so seeing I have had to cut down a little bit on my workload. You know, I realized that I can't sit up and edit till 11 o'clock at night, yeah, like I used to do, because it just doesn't work. And then of course now, so I'm 38 weeks pregnant,
yeah,
so I'll have a baby soon. And so that's going to change things obviously as well with the workflow and timing and schedules and yeah, all that. So
yeah, when I think I mentioned before I started recording, when I realized like how many weeks you were along, I was like, man, I'm surprised you even like responded to me at all to interview. So thanks for getting on. This is awesome. So do you guys know, is it a boy or girl? Are you guys gonna find out?
It's a boy.
It's a boy, okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. So do you have, like, as you're building these spaces, like, are you seeing, like, working with your kids, like, is that kind of like in the back of your mind, like, oh, this is gonna be so cool when we get to sit down together and do that kind of stuff?
Well, yeah, definitely. And I'm a huge like believer in just like learning by example. So I think that if this kid grows up in an environment where we're constantly doing things and, you know, sometimes struggling through concepts and just pushing through and just kind of having the mentality that you can really do anything, in the sense of like you can create any project you want. There's no like... like everything, like any material is like fun to work with and test. I think that's a really good idea in general to raise a kid. Like that environment, I think, is really would be, I would have loved to grow up like that, I guess it was what I'm thinking sometimes, yeah, you know. But yeah, definitely. And that's what I have the idea of the makerspace in mind too. And even just like once I have the baby, I realize it's going to be a lot easier for me to just go out in the dining room and do some work, you know, in between an hour or two I have, as opposed to maybe starting big projects out in the shop. So
yeah,
that's kind of in the back of my head as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So as far as just YouTube in general, I know you've talked about this, I feel like, a few times. It's pretty like male dominated, which I'm sure you definitely know that. So what's it kind of been like, just bringing a different perspective, bringing a different gender to this kind of space? Like, how has that kind of experience been for you?
Actually, the experience has been great. I think that oftentimes, at least in my experience, people have not really focused so much on the fact that I am a girl.
Yeah.
And I feel like oftentimes people, I mean, the project speaks for itself, whatever it is you do. Something does well, whether it's a good build or a good video, not so much like because I'm not a guy doing it.
Right.
So I mean, sometimes you hear about people having bad experiences, and you know, every now and then you get a weird comment, but it's easy enough to delete those.
Right.
But overall, I would say I've had very, very little like of that stuff, and people have been very supportive and very nice, and like, but I really do think that it's not about whether or not I'm a girl or a boy. I think it's very much, it always comes down to the project or the video, whether what you do is interesting to somebody, whether there is some like substance behind it, whether there it's an interesting concept. And then it doesn't matter, nothing else really matters at all. And that's why I find YouTube so awesome in a sense, because it's interesting how it kind of really divides people into interests. Like you can find your group, your niche, no matter what that is, because there's like people in not every, but so many interest groups. And then everybody who flock to those channels or those areas share those commonalities, even though they may be completely different otherwise. You know, they may not have much in common outside of that one interest. That's what I find so interesting about YouTube, that it's like this wild space where people come together based on what they actually want to watch and what they're interested in learning, and how it is this space for where it's up to you to learn. You know, it's not like you know, like school where you have to do certain things, or, you know, it's like everything is in the control of you and the people watching, you know, whether you come from the point of view of creating the content, it's all up to you to make it. Or if you come from the point of view of learning, that you have to be the self starter, you know, you have to actually go out and watch these videos and learn these things. So I think that it's a really cool space just because it makes people take initiative no matter what end you're on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. So I mentioned before too that we're expecting as well, but we don't know, we're not going to find out the gender until they're born. And so I was talking to my wife.
No, I said that sounds fun too. I could go either way with finding out the sex. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I was talking about my wife about like building with our kids someday, but I kept saying he. And so whenever I said she, I would say something different. And my wife looked at me and she's like, if she's a girl, she could build too. I'm like, yeah, totally. But it's so cool to see like your channel and like April Wilkinson's and like Laura Comp and like all the folks that are out there that I can be like, if we have a girl, like, hey, these people are making amazing things. Like, you can get out there too. Like, so it's so cool to see, because I know you're going to inspire future people as well to make stuff, even maybe when they don't think they can. So,
yeah. And it is always, I mean, I mentioned how I don't think people really judge the video so much whether I'm a girl, but one thing that is really fun and really exciting is that I often do get emails and messages from people who say that they watch the videos with their daughters or their granddaughter or something like that, or sometimes from young girls themselves who write. And even though it's something that I didn't quite anticipate in some ways before I started. I mean, it's not like I didn't realize that, but it is true that there are not a whole lot of girls doing this. And so just to know that other younger girls are watching the videos and seeing that this is normal, it's not necessarily a big deal. That it, you know, and I don't want to make it a big deal because I don't think it is. And because of that, I mean, that is really fun whenever you do get those messages or emails or sometimes letters, and people can be really generous with their time and their, when they send you their thoughts. So that's always really fun.
That's neat. So kind of one of the last things I wanted to ask you about. It feels like when I watch videos from people that aren't American, it almost feels like there's a different like aesthetic to the projects, and they always feel way cooler most of the time. And so, like, do you find, like, especially even when you're working with your husband, like, you're maybe the approach you come to design and like your influences, like, do you feel like those are different, or that just because you were born outside of the States, you bring something different to it?
I would say that both me and Matt, we have very similar aesthetics. But I do definitely think in general that maybe, what I like is different from what many other people like. And that is also kind of course, developed over time. Like when I first got into woodworking, I just love the idea of like dark wood because I feel like I hadn't been around dark wood in so long. And then, of course, dark wood to me meant like framing lumber that you stain pine that you stain or something like that, because I didn't quite realize the difference or you know, had not much experience with that. And then as I've been doing this stuff more and, of course, gotten more involved in hardwood and using darker stuff, like I really come to appreciate the contrasts between using very light colors and a lot of white and things like that, and then kind of combining that with darker woods as accent pieces. And that is something that I really, really like. I often feel like that you often kind of carry something with you, maybe that you You get this idea in your head sometimes, and then you work up, you want to do something, or you have this sense of design that you really get into. I remember, like, before we bought the house, for example, we lived in an apartment for a couple of years, and we weren't allowed to paint the walls, and I was reading all these design blogs and things online, and all these dark, various colored rooms, and I feel like I had just built up this craving for color. So when we first moved into this house, I painted every single room a different color because I just had to get it out of my system.
Yeah, yeah.
And since then, I repainted a couple times. What I mean with that, though, is that I feel like it's very important to completely, like, to work through your cycles.
Okay.
Like, so if you have this inkling to do something or this design things, I think that you should never hold back into doing them, because if you do, you'll never get past it. You'll never actually develop into something, like, you never get a different idea, or you want, like, that idea won't translate into something else. So I often think that it's important to just kind of go for it, no matter, even if it sounds like a really weird concept or a really weird design. Like, for example, I made this project a while back where I had this idea that I wanted to put concrete around the balloon and make a lamp out of it.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't really know how it would turn out, and I didn't really know exactly how I wanted it to go.
Uh-huh.
I just had this idea, and I spent, I don't know how many balloons I used. I made, like, I don't know, maybe 20 different ones or something. Did a lot of tests. And then in the end, the lamp maybe didn't turn out, like, wonderful. Or, like, there was something about the shape. I couldn't quite figure out, like, how I wanted to position it. And then I made this weird triangular walnut base for it, which was cool. But I think maybe it was a little bit too out there in terms of design. It was,
yeah,
like... But then at the same time, I thought that when you have those kind of, like, impulses, it's important to just go with them in order to, like, work past that, so that next time you have a better understanding of what it is that you want to do. And I think that's very much true for design in general. Like, you ask about, like, my, like, European sense of style or whatever. I think no matter what point of view you're coming from, I think the most important thing is to just, like, try any weird impulses you may have, and then you'll develop your own thing based on that. But
yeah,
the worst thing is when you're just stuck and you don't do anything, because you may think that I think a lot of people have this idea that they can't do whatever it is that they want to do because they don't have the right material or the right resources or the right tools. And then they're just stuck in the mud, and they never get anywhere. And that's when I think that you should just do a version of whatever it is that you think you want to do, because that's the only way to, like, move forward.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. That definitely makes sense. And I'll make sure to include that link. Is it the concrete 3-watt LED light with walnut? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes, with walnut and balloons. Yes.
With walnut and balloons. Okay,
that's what it is.
So make sure and check that one. That one's that. I remember that video now. That was a really neat one. Well, cool. Well, the last couple things I had for you. First off, on your other channel, is it Darbin Notes? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
The second channel, IKEA. pronunciation video was hilarious. When I actually heard how the stuff was said, I'm like, I can't even make those sounds, much less have any idea. So that one is neat. But why the second channel, or what kind of was the deciding factor behind that?
So the second channel actually started, like, a really long time ago, like,
okay,
about the same time as I started the main channel, but then I kind of got away from it for a while because I really focused on the main channel. But then recently I kind of felt like, I don't know, it's so easy to get into a kind of, a rhythm and a style and a way you do your videos.
Yeah.
And I felt like I wanted to shake things up a little bit, because in some ways I often feel like there's a million things I could make videos about if I had the time, or, you know, sometimes you have these ideas of these, you know, I'm going to create a cooking channel, I'm going to make a sewing channel, or I'm going to make a philosophy channel.
And yeah,
of course, you can only do so much. You can't really focus your attention into all those things. But I really felt like with my building video that I had kind of, I don't know, I just wanted to do something a little bit different, but I didn't want to, like, completely, you know, go away from my topic, which I really love on my main channel. So I thought that maybe I'm just going to give myself like a blank slate on the other channel and just do whatever I want to for a while, where I just kind of, I don't know, do weird things and just like don't think about like views or whether something will be well received or whether something is a good idea, and just kind of gotta go for it.
Yeah.
Just make vlogs about my day or about, yeah, going to IKEA and pronouncing words or yeah, making an omelette or whatever it may be. So I started making these weird little short, more simplistic videos there, just kind of for fun.
Yeah.
And to connect with people too more, because I think oftentimes when you do a build video, it's very much like, okay, today we're going to build this, blah, 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 blah. Here are the steps. Like, this is what we're going to do. And it's, while I think, I mean, I always kind of go back and forth on that, like how in depth do you go into a video and how much do you include other things? And I often come back to the fact that I want to create a very clean and crisp build video,
yeah,
more or less, depending on what it is. But, and I don't want to have all this other stuff. But then at the same time, you have all these people watching you and who have been following you sometimes for years. And that doesn't mean that some of those people may actually be interested in seeing some other things that you do. Or, and it just is kind of a nice kind of a creative exercise to not feel so, you know, like boxed in that corner of the type of videos that you make.
Yeah.
So it was kind of fun to, it's been kind of fun making the vlogs on Darby Notes, just from that point of view, to connect with people in a different way and just have complete creative freedom to do whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah, yeah, it's fun. And are you doing a daily vlog? Is that right? In the past, at least the past week or so?
Well, I started out, yeah, I started out as a daily vlog, and now I've kind of, it's kind of gone down a little bit, but a couple times a week anyway.
Okay, gotcha, yeah.
So, yeah.
That's fun. That's real fun.
Yeah.
Well, so the show is the Make or Break show, and so the last two questions we ask everybody is a make and a break question, and the make one is there a, I'm sure you've been asked this before, but is there a project that doesn't necessarily have to be your favorite, but maybe one that is like the one you really remember the most kind of over the years of building?
I think I would probably, I often feel like the projects that I have are a little bit more recent, stick in your mind a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I would probably say the counter for the makerspace right now.
Okay.
Because that was such a huge project. We used rough sawn lumber for it that we milled down, and using these huge pieces of big leaf maple, and then using our rather, I would say, not inferior equipment, but, you know, home, you know, regular stuff where you, it would have been so much easier if you had bigger, you know, we have a DIY jointer, which is like a planer turned upside down, and just like a lot of these tools, which using a lot of hand planes, and it was just a massive, massive job. But at the end, it came out, and it took months and months, and then we didn't do anything for a while, and then kind of got back to it, and it was just massive. But at the end, it turned out really, really nice. And just to be able to use that now and look at it and know that so much work went into it, and it was like, I would, I know after that I was like, I don't know if I would ever recommend anybody doing this because this was just way too much work for this. But it came out really good at the same time, so it's one of those things which you look at and you kind of dread a little bit, but then you really like it at the same time, so you're really happy you have it. Yeah,
that's awesome. So so on the break side of things, is there, doesn't have to be a project either, but maybe a moment where something went wrong, but there was something that, maybe like a lesson learned that really kind of stuck out to you?
You know, I was thinking about that before, and there hasn't been like one project or one situation that, you know, went disastrous. But one thing I was thinking about, and I don't think a lot of people realize that, is that so often something doesn't go right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's not a rare occurrence at all that you break something, especially when you're working with electronics, you burn out a chip or a light or a controller, and you thought you were, oh my God, I'm going to have this video ready by tomorrow. Then you're like, okay, it's going to be another week or two. Or like even working with the with making this counter, there's so much tension in this wood that sometimes it just kind of cracked on you.
Yeah.
And you have to start over, or the bandsaw blade breaks, and then you dread putting on a new bandsaw blade because it's so damn annoying. So it's like there's I cannot think about a like a one a moment or project. I just think that they happen constantly.
Right.
There's all these little moments all the time that kind of that are extremely frustrating, and oftentimes they are not included in the videos. And it's just when you break something, or something doesn't work, or you miscalculated, there's just a lot of that going on behind the scenes all the time.
Gotcha. Yeah. So. There's always something going wrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, sweet. So is darbinorver.com, is that the best place you would send people to check out your stuff?
Sure, yeah, darbinorver.com, or just go to YouTube.
Okay.
And yeah, search for Darbin Orver on YouTube, or darbinorver.com is great, so either way.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate your time and hanging out with me. It's a blast chatting. Your stuff is so much fun to watch, and it's such a big inspiration.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It was a lot of fun to come on. Thanks for having me.